Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to a Sunday, May 22nd. Yeah, 22nd, 2022. Just a lot of 222s in this intro. So thank you for checking out this Sunday edition of the podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. On today's show, the return of sports reporters who have indeed reassembled. Great to have Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast and Andrew Hammond of the Detroit Free Press back on this very program. Love getting to talk about the biggest stories in sports with those two. So great to have them on this edition of the podcast. That will be the extent of this edition of the pod. No part two or part three on today's program, but that's okay, because on these Sunday shows, you should look out on this feed on Sundays to just get sports reporters assemble. Kind of a lighter load on the weekend. So we talk about the biggest stuff in sports this week: the NBA draft lottery, the NBA playoffs with the Heat and Celtics, the Warriors Mavericks, and what we think about both of those series, and then the draft winners and losers, what the Magic will do with the number one pick. And then Jimbo versus Saban down there in A&M and Bama country. So all that and more coming up on this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. You can email this very program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at @chase_thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. You can read me at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. New piece up today, or I guess yesterday, on my schedule and just where I'm at with my writing and all that good stuff. Kind of a little essay that I put together yesterday that you can check out, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type in your email, become a subscriber today so that you never miss any of my written content. Don't forget, folks, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, make sure you hit that pause button and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review if you have not already done so, because it helps other people find the show and it helps this show continue to grow here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all of other great shows across the Blue Wire Pod Network if you have not already done so. And all right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast, the Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it, the sports reporters. We have indeed reassembled. Bob got the jab. Part four.
Technically four. Booster two, jab four. I am very tired. It's not as bad as it was last time.
Mm-hmm.
First booster, I was on my back quicker than the French army in 1940.
There you go.
I was very tired.
That's a good reference. I'll pretend I know it. I was about to combine your name, Bobby and Robert. Bobber
was a nickname I've had at times. In any case, I am all for people getting boosters. Please get boosted, but it's going to make you feel bad for 24 hours. It's worth it, though. Go get boosted.
There you go. There you go. Also here, Andrew Hammond repping his favorite NFL team, the Dallas Cowboys. People forget Andrew, Dallas Cowboys superfan Hammond of the Detroit
Free Press.
Is that true?
No, hell no.
No, it's
not. My camera's in HD and I really didn't brush my hair this morning. Screw it.
This has been a pro hat podcast. Mm-hmm. It has been. I feel like I need to get more hats in order to keep up with the rotation.
Oh, it's okay, Bob. You're
I don't want a beanie it the whole time.
Well, dude, it's too hot. Dude. How are you not burning up at this point? What's New York like today?
I keep cool thoughts. It's approximately, I think it was, 73 right now. 73.
Okay. Not bad.
Quite lovely, yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to get up to, it was almost 90 yesterday. It's full on that south summer going on here in East Tennessee. No,
it's raining. It's raining on and off today, so.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, what's new with you in the last week? Anything new on your end?
Not much. I got a new project that I can talk about off air coming. And yeah, I'm very upset at WWE for booking themselves into a corner and blaming others. Shocking. I know. Mm.
There you go. Bobby Silverman, anything new your end?
Working on some stories. Nothing I can.
You're always working on stories.
Yet. I like my stories. I got three that hopefully some of them will be done soon.
How do you do that? I don't think I could do multiple stories at once where I have to keep track of where I'm at and where my place is.
You know the Vegas act where the plates are spinning on tiny poles? Yeah, it's sort of like that.
That sounds exhausting.
I am an inveterate procrastinator, and if you give me something to distract myself that is not the work I have to do, I'm like a crow.
Mm.
If I see something shiny, I'm gonna want to go attack it.
So, mm.
And we do live in the age of distraction these days, so there are many that are readily available at the push of a button. So one way that I, and this may not be the best productivity hack for all you kids out there, one way I try to conquer my own easily distracted self is I give myself a good 3 to 4 projects to work on at any time, so that I can procrastinate working on one thing that needs finishing by working on something else, which fulfills my innate desire to avoid doing the work I have to do that is a crushing, oppressive deadline and that is screaming to get done, but I can work on something different. So I'm still being productive and procrastinating at the same time. This is I'm not putting this into a self-help book or Substack. Just take some notes and
Slacker.
Please don't follow this. I would not recommend to anyone that they also take up this work.
My dumb brain, man. I finished up finals this week, and thank you, sir. I got an A. I finished with an A in one of them, and we're gonna see in the other. I have an A going into. Really taking her time on the final grades being posted in the other one, but fingers crossed on that one. But one semester left, and excited about that. But it's so difficult, man. To when you have all your stuff, you're like, it's all neat, all my stuff's ready to go. I still have 48 hours to submit this, and you're like, why do I want to have this looming over my head? Because I can't focus on anything else until I get it done. But your dumb brain's like, you got time. Why not read this next Ringer piece? Why not just read what's going on with the latest Twitter drama? Why not? Like, it's just so stupid.
There's a lot of drama on Twitter.com.
There is a lot of drama on Twitter.com.
If you follow the right people, you can see people getting mad at things.
Mm-hmm.
I was
people getting mad at the people who are getting mad at things.
I was on vacation last week, and I deleted the Twitter app.
Ooh.
How was that?
I gotta tell you, it felt phenomenal.
So why'd you bring it back? Just go. Just stay off the grid, Andrew.
For work. He's got to do it for work.
That's true.
Man.
We're all trapped. Yeah. We're all trapped.
And so, because the last time I, like, took a vacation, I literally just stayed on Twitter the entire time, and I was just like, no.
Ooh, bad.
I'm disconnecting. Well, this was also 2020 when literally shit just kept hitting the fan every day. Mm. And you're just like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen today. So, like, now I look at it as, okay, I need to disconnect from the world. I need to get away from everything. And it was great. Like, the first thing I did...
Where did you go for vacation?
Charlotte. Mm. Charlotte. Okay. Charlotte, North Kakalaki.
I like Charlotte.
Great town.
It's now Asheville. Asheville's still number one in North Carolina. Pop, you would love Asheville. Have you been there?
No.
You would love Asheville.
Like, yeah, I feel like Bob would... Small town, North Carolina.
Okay. Small, cool stuff. It's just Asheville is such a cool little town, man. Asheville's one of my favorite spots for sure. But that's good, man. That's good. Where'd you say you went this time?
Charlotte.
I thought you did 2020 with Charlotte.
No, 2020 was Atlanta.
Oh.
Yeah, 2020 I went down to Atlanta. Basically, this was when I got, like, reassigned at my job, and so I was no longer a sports writer, so I basically took a FU vacation, and yeah, I needed to get away from everything, but at the same time I was still trying to stay connected to everything. But yeah, no, it kind of is what it is. But no, it was fun to get away from everything. And yeah, like, the first thing that happened when I popped back on Twitter is I met a new friend named Mark Messier in the Charlotte airport. So, you know, besties.
Former Rangers great Mark Messier?
Yes.
Bob, are you a Rangers guy or an Islanders guy?
Very casual Rangers fan. I've been watching the playoffs. And
so that's weird. How did that happen? Because isn't it usually Jets, Mets, and Islanders?
Yeah, you're hitting right into the Long Island, Staten Island sweet spot with that.
Right.
Yeah. No, my sports fandom was entirely determined by my older cousins.
Hmm.
And so I liked the teams they liked, and they liked Jets, Mets, Knicks, Rangers. And so that's
there you go.
Where it went. Yeah. Very casual hockey fan. And I watch, and within 2 seconds, I turn into Don Cherry. It's really amazing. I just go, I start screaming, pucks on net, puck in deep, cycle the puck.
Yes, like, get pucks on net.
Why are all these European players so soft? Stop with these fancy boy passes and just.
Oh my God, you really are going full Don Cherry.
I really am. It's not something I chose. It's something I expected.
What is wrong with you?
All I know is I look at Artemi Panarin and I'm like, yeah, that's. Skating around is kind of pretty to watch, but maybe you could shoot. That would be helpful. So yeah, I like teams composed of 240-pound 6'2" guys from Moose Jaw who flatten players with an elbow. That's what I think.
You know, they don't do much of that anymore, sadly. That's why
the Rangers don't win. And so,
well, I was going to say it's that and. Yeah, like, look, Tampa Bay, I think they won a third straight Stanley Cup, but my God.
Do they put pucks on net?
That team is so, they're so clinical, it's boring. You know how teams are clinical and it's like somewhat fascinating to watch? Like, it's never like super exciting, but you're like, oh, I can sit there and watch them play. Watching Tampa Bay are just like... Okay, so they're going to jump out to a 2-0 lead
They've got enough skill players to offset their New Jersey Devils mid-2000s neutral zone trap defense. They're good.
So boring.
I've been enjoying watching Carolina because they just throw themselves all over the ice and see what happens next, and they forecheck.
Have you been watching Edmonton and Calgary?
That's a real barn burner, real Western Conference barn burner. It's
like,
fun.
Hey, Battle of Alberta is real. Like, I had a tweet last night. I was like, you rarely get fights in the playoffs because the players understand there's a greater, as you go deeper in the playoffs, the rare fights become, I'm like, we might get a full on line brawl by the end of this series. Because it's two teams. It's Edmonton, who should probably be in a Western Conference Finals or even a Stanley Cup. Then you got Calgary, that's just all these young kids who, I swear to God, are just, they have a morphine drip like Red Bull in their system, and they just hop on the ice skating all around. Just like, this, I mean, it's basically like NHL 22 come to life. And all we're missing are just massive fights every 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll buy Edmonton and Alberta.
Yeah. Good job, Chase. Good job. I'm going to throw this phone at you through the
computer. Alberta is part of Canada, just in case. Western Canada.
I've heard about some good North American philosophers on that side of the of the pond.
No. No. All right.
I was about to do the Willem Dafoe.
Are we doing it?
No, we're not doing this.
Are we downshifting from hockey to the next subject?
Well, the next subject is the NBA playoffs, because last night was fantastic. The Warriors game, Warriors-Mavs. Warriors go up 2-0. I think they're 14-1 all-time when they go up 2-0 in a series. It's a big... big deal. And Luka 40 plus, Draymond fouls out in the fourth. Jordan Poole was really great, but Jalen Brunson also really great. A lot of great guard play, but Kevon Looney, just
everyone, all the kids love Kevon Looney. Kevon Looney, who is only 6'8", but somehow appears to be towering over everybody else in the court. Mm-hmm. I think he might be equidistant. I think he's just as wide as he is tall.
I was going to say it's the shoulders. The shoulders make him look significantly bigger. Because he walks like this. He walks like Frankenstein, kind of.
Yeah, he really does. He lumbers up and down the court. He's been incredibly... We haven't had Anthony Mason-shaped dudes in the NBA for a while, and I think we're due for a comeback. Real, like...
just muscle hamsters?
The Danny Fortson types is what we really need a comeback of.
Danny Fortson. Seattle supersonic legend Danny Fortson.
University of Cincinnati legend Danny Fortson.
There you go.
Let's just remember some guys. Instead of going to therapy, let's just remember some guys.
Remember some guys.
All men want to do is sit around naming...
naming guys, eat hot chip, and lie. That's what men want to do.
You're damn right.
Andrew, what did you make of last night's game? Do you think this is a wrap? Do you think
series over?
Okay.
Like, as I'm watching this Warriors comeback, like it's basically every Warriors run. I was explaining this to somebody today. I said it's every Warriors run that the Cavs had to deal with during that string of NBA finals.
There's just a moment. Yeah, there's just all those great teams. There's just a moment where the switch gets flipped and you can't do anything to stop them. It's really, it's fun that they're back. It's like Jordan Poole turning into an incredibly dangerous scoring guard is not something I expected a year or so ago, but hey, we're here. Otto Porter giving valuable minutes to Otto Porter turning into their slightly longer version of Andre Iguodala is not something I foresaw. No, it's just, they're a well coached team. Steph is a killer. Klay Thompson somehow still being 85% of his old self after the Achilles tear is just they're great.
It's hilarious. Because you're just like, oh, they're gonna go, and you know the run is coming. Mm. You know the run is coming, and there's nothing you can do about it. And there's maybe been one team, like literally one team in an 10 to 8 year span that has been able to withstand
the Warriors
said run.
haven't lost a Western Conference playoff game since 2014.
That is wild.
We have playoff series, not game.
Yeah.
Sorry. Lost a whole series since 2014.
Pretty wild.
They Draymond, I mean, he was just all over the place, and he hit that big three late, and then he, of course, like right after, he takes another one, which was funny. I appreciate Draymond for doing it.
Draymond should take more heat checks.
Yes. Draymond taking a heat check after hitting 1-3 is delightful. I don't know. He is such a different player now because he really doesn't shoot at all. You just forget, like.
No, he never did. He barely.
He shot a lot more during their title run.
No.
He shot a lot more because people get annoyed about how much Draymond was shooting.
No. He lopped like a couple of shots off of his plate per game. He really wasn't. You're misremembering those 2014-15 games.
I don't know. I think he shot a lot more.
Harrison Barnes was on the
team. Well, that's the other thing. So. Andrew Wiggins was somebody I wrote down. It was just, he was driving and driving and driving
he's
and finding dudes. Wiggins
very,
was
very, yes. Wiggins has really become, I mean, everyone, Wiggins got clowned on a lot for not being, you know, the kind of player that you often get at the first, because people, he was considered an elite prospect coming out of Kansas. And he
Hold on, Bob,
really
can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
Draymond Green took 4.2 threes a game 2014 to 2015, and this year he did 1.2 per game. I told you, he took four.
You're right.
He shot a lot more.
He always, I think this is the Jason Concepcion online, I'm going to steal it. Draymond Green has always, for the entirety of his career, shot threes as if he's wearing a backpack loaded down with bricks.
That's true. That is a fact.
Loaded down with like a mason brick. Like, it takes a lot of work to grind the machine. Like him squatting, it really feels like he's doing it with heavy weights somewhere on his body. It's an effort thing, and but he did take more. I was at the NBA draft when the Warriors took him. I was backstage milling about trying to get interviews, and I overheard Mark Tatum calling out. With the TK pick, the Warriors select Draymond Green. And I was like, oh, that's a cool pick. He was fun at Michigan State. And then I moved on. But I distinctly remember that happening. But I want to bring us on to Andrew. Andrew, think back, probe the recesses of your memory. What did I say approximately, I'm going to say 6 to 8 weeks ago, about who was going to be making the Eastern Conference Finals?
I'm pretty sure you said the Boston Celtics.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's happening?
So, funny story. Watching Boston. So, Boston goes down 3-2 to Milwaukee. Like, Marcus Smart basically almost screwed the season for the Celtics. Also, don't mind the idea, but Jesus Christ, don't hit a fadeaway against Pat Connaughton. It's not like he's the, you know, the best defender on the team. Jesus Christ. Anyway, everything that they had struggled with since maybe 2017, going on the road, winning a big game, then coming back and doing it all over again, they squashed all of that.
It's a well-constructed roster. Every piece knows what their job is. Nobody on that team is trying to, like, the big factor is Jason Tatum figuring out how to be not just one, excising most of the Kobe brain parts of his shot diet where he'll walk into like fadeaway 18 footers, but two, figuring out how to be a distributor and a creator in addition to being just a deadly. And I'm stealing again. This is a line from Ben Collins, who covers the dystopia beat over at NBC. Ben says that Jason Tatum reminds him of peak Tracy McGrady. And honestly, I think that is a very valid comparison.
Yep.
Much better defender.
Yeah, better defender than Tracy McGrady. I mean, with all of these guys in defense, when you're talking about that, it's like, well, yeah, but nobody in 2003 was required to cover nearly as much ground and a variety of scores as defenses are now.
Like, yeah. Offenses were like, way more structured.
Well, yeah. What is, like, there was a Twitter debate about name the most dominant, like, is Giannis having one of the most dominant runs in NBA history? And the answer is yes. And I said, well, people were offering up comparisons. And I said, like, Kareem's run is one, you know, Michael Jordan, of course, but like I said, Shaq should be included in that. And they were like, well, Shaq didn't have to play a lot of defense. I'm like, yeah, because he had to like body up Greg Ostertag. Like, what was the, there was just not a lot required. Like, Shaq's job on defense was to protect the rim and be large. Like, right. No one was asking Shaq to scoot out to the 3-point line and get a hand in Davis Bertans' face or anything.
Or
like that.
Or, you know, my favorite thing, and you know, we joked about this last week, talking about Twitter. We're talking about, you know, Shaq and, you know, what he did in the 2001 and 2002 NBA Finals.
Yeah,
I said,
you put,
I said, you don't see the 2002 NBA Finals a lot. You want to know why? Because it's a snuff film.
Yeah.
It is an absolute snuff film.
Was that the Nets year? Was that the Nets year?
Yeah. So Shaq had a dunk. So the like the iconic picture that everybody sees where Shaq is dunking on everybody. If I remember correctly,
BR Jamie on the Rogan Show and look up the stats for Shaq in the 2002 NBA Finals.
But like,
I love that I've been demoted to the stat guy on my own podcast.
The dunk Jamie, that he had.
Did you fact check this, Jamie? Thank you.
But like the dunk that he had, that, you know, that's like the iconic image of like four guys. That happened in the first quarter of, I believe, game one. And you're just like, oh, it's going to be that kind of series. Cool. All right.
Game two, he had 40 and 12. Game one, he had 36 and 16.
at a much slower paced NBA.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot fewer possessions per game.
He had a sneaky 35 and 11 in game three. Let's see. What do you have in game four? So he averaged close to 40 a game.
Yeah, he was like I think 36 and 12 in that series. Or something.
34 and 10 in game four. Yeah. So yeah, that's wild.
And the funny thing is, remember when the Nets were supposed to have the high paced offense? Like, they were supposed to be the up and down team. Jason Kidd was basically
they
at
were
his height
in 2002. They were.
Yeah. That was, and you're just like, oh, man. And then Shaq was just like, nope, I'm going to take the sledgehammer, and I'm just going to go into the paint on your entire team and just hit everybody with sledgehammers.
Nobody could stop them.
Well, think about the difference with how the game is played back then, because they threw Aaron Williams, they threw McCullough,
they threw everybody at him.
Was Mutombo healthy for that final?
I know no. No, that was... I thought he was. Was he still in Philly at that point?
Yeah, he wasn't even on the team. I think he had to be still in Philly, because he was not on. Because they threw out Jason Collins too. So it was the three of them. I actually rewatched this series last summer.
They traded McCullough. They traded McCullough for Mutombo. He was off Philly. I'm pretty sure they traded for Mutombo. He just wasn't healthy, and so they were
because I remember
the McCullough was the starting five in this series.
Right, because the Nets. Jamie, could you look up when Dikembe Mutombo got traded to the Nets?
That's when I know I'll make it, guys, when I have like the stat guy just on these
podcasts. You need a guy. You need an intern.
Mm-hmm. I'm at a university. I should put in a thing.
Find a rude teen who wants to break into sports media.
Yeah.
Give them a shot.
They're willing to do anything.
That's a little...
In any case, Jason Tatum... and of course, like, so much of this Celtics run is predicated on Al Horford going in the Wayback Machine and becoming a very valuable, like,
it's
switchable, floor-spreading big again, one saw coming.
It's okay, so perfect example of that. It feels like you're just waiting for the pumpkin to rot, and you're just like, oh, God. Because every time – so Atlanta Al Horford was fun. Atlanta Al Horford was, you know, you're like, oh, okay, a quality big, you know, okay. He goes to Boston for like maybe a year or two, and you're like, oh, okay. Then you're like, oh my God, Al Horford, please stop. You are hurting the children.
He definitely is the last member of those great Florida Gator teams still in the NBA,
which is wild.
Yeah, I guess so. With Noah,
that like he's the guy.
Corey Brewer is no longer around. There's Joakim Corey Brewer, Al Horford, David Lee no longer in the NBA. Although Lee was like right before them. But
Nick Legend. Remember that tip-in he had at the buzzer? Who could forget?
I remember all of this. David Lee was a great player. David Lee is also obscenely wealthy outside of basketball.
Yeah, wasn't he on the stock market, like basically during the off season and like the early mid 2000s?
David Lee is from St. Louis and is the heir to a very large coat hanger conglomerate. His David Lee's grandfather is like very, very, very rich.
Wait, is that the cleaner Lee's Cleaners?
It's not like a chain of dry cleaners. They manufactured coat hangers.
Okay.
Jamie, please Google David Lee's family. Talk about his coat hanger money.
Okay, because I remember him being like on Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And he was talking about like businesses, and I'm just like, this is during the off season. I'm like, this dude is making so much bank. I was like, does he even need the NBA?
That was like Steve Young. Have you heard that story that Steve Young like didn't even want to do Monday Night Football or anything? He's like, no, I'm just in venture capital. Like he's just a business guy and never wanted. And they were like, we need you on TV to help things. So he like does TV.
We have to use Trent Dilfer. Do you want to see Trent Dilfer on TV offering expert advice?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Please,
then.
Anybody but Tom Brady. I am so sick of that. That the universe has decided that Tom Brady has to be a private part of our lives forever, showing up on Monday Night Football once a week and being paid an obscene amount of money to say absolutely zero interesting things ever.
Tom Brady's so bored with his family that Fox gave him like $37 million for 5 years and say, do whatever you want.
How many? He's not even going to have time to kiss his kids on the lips now. When was he? He's going to be preoccupied.
Oh, God.
You know what's crazy, too? The thing about Brady and that number is just, if you had thrown that number at Peyton, that makes sense. Like, Peyton is probably worth that, and Peyton as a full-time commentator
Peyton Manning is a charming man and would be, I don't know if he'd say anything particularly novel or interesting.
But he'd be funny. And we know he'd be funny. And we know he would make the broadcast. We don't know Brady's entertaining. We don't know that at all.
No, we know he's not. In fact, we know he isn't. We know that there is, setting aside everything that Tom Brady has accomplished as a professional athlete, which is, I still think we haven't wrapped our heads around how staggering it is that he's still this great at age 43. That should not be possible. Calling it unprecedented doesn't even begin to encapsulate the degree of difficulty which he has surpassed and the things he's accomplished. So let's take that as a given. The man has never said an interesting thing his entire life, and every single venture outside of football has either been like sort of playing footsie with fringe political movements or endorsing quack medicine or wanting to become wanting to launch like Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop for Men. For reasons also that escape me, nothing. None of it is. It is often quite weird and inexplicable, but none of it is particularly interesting or insightful. We know that he is not. Let's say it this way: he has never provided any evidence of being a person capable of doing the job for now which he is the highest paid person in the profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll see. We still got some time before that comes about.
In any case, Celtics Warriors is going to be a fun final. Then
I would not write out the Heat, man. I'm not doing it.
So Warriors Heat was my preseason finals pick, and the only reason that I kind of want the Heat because I'm like, Milwaukee needed this year to establish themselves as a staying force in the East. The problem is, look,
the Heat would get BTFO'd by the Warriors. Like, they don't have enough. Like, if Kyle Lowry were healthy and still playing like the Kyle Lowry even of the last few years in Toronto, it might be a different series, but I don't think he can win a. I don't think he can compete for a title with Gary Vincent as your starting point guard. I don't think Max Strutz getting regular being an important cog in your rotation means you're.
And you need them on every single night if you're going to advance.
Warriors-Celtics series would be fun and cool.
I would be stressed the hell out, Bob. Do you want that for me?
Yes! Yes! Because of what it would mean for me. I feel like, and the rest of the basketball-liking world, I feel like your stress, okay, your team is in the finals. This is the world's smallest violin playing for Andrew Hammond and being slightly stressed.
Don't need it. Don't need that stress, Bob. Also, I hope you guys enjoyed the message that I sent each of you.
Which is it? I don't know.
On Twitter.
I don't know what that website is.
Let me see. Okay. Oh, you sent it.
Jamie,
oh, no.
Can you log into our DMs?
No, I don't want to read this. Andrew, I don't want this. I see a lot of caps. I don't want to do that. I have
a strict
no caps rule. Winners and losers, though, from the NBA draft lottery. Bob, who did you have as a big winner based on how the odds fell? Not the Knicks.
The Knicks haven't moved up in the NBA draft lottery since 1985.
Well, is that the one time they needed a frozen envelope to?
The one time it worked correctly when things were rigged in New York's favor, yes. 1985, and they got Ewing. That's the last time they moved up. That's the last. It's okay. I feel like I didn't want Paolo Banchero or Jabari Smith or noted Giacometti structure Chet Holmgren. The player I thought would be really cool is Jaden Ivey. I like him. He's fun. I think he's in any other year he wouldn't be the fourth pick, but I think he's a cool and fun player and would fit well in there. But they're not going to get him, so that's fine. Winner has to be the Kangs, man. Moving up to four. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to trade it for an established player? There is gossip via Henry Abbott.
That
the Kings are trying to, in fact, include assets to someone to get Chet Holmgren.
I don't know how Holmgren and Sabonis works, but it'd be fun to watch. I would love to watch it.
That can work.
Let's watch the Kings screw this up.
No, Holmgren as on that roster as a floor spacer and a rim protector next to Sabonis in the low post. That actually fits kind of well, assuming you think Chet Holmgren is going to pan out, which I don't. But I could very easily be wrong, and a lot of the advanced statistics say otherwise. But watching that guy in the NCAA, like in the Final Four or wherever he got to, the Elite Eight.
Arkansas.
I just watched him get like any dude, any Danny Fortson sized dude was just knocking him out of the paint, and I'm just like, I don't think he has the kind of frame that can add more core strength in order to hold up with the rigors. And now you're just talking about like a 7-foot shooting guard.
I've been saying this pretty much the entire year, because I'd say out of all three of us, I maybe watched the most college basketball. Chase might watch just as much, but
I watch every Tennessee game and a lot of the big ones. But yeah, you probably watch more than me.
Are you a Lofton Jr. guy? Is that what we're getting at, Chase?
It's a solid kid. I look at Chet Holmgren and I see all these NBA people going, "Oh yeah, how?" I'm fascinated at how much college basketball, NBA, and this is like with the NFL draft too. People who don't watch college football but are super obsessed with the NFL draft, I wonder how much...
What's got two thumbs and is that guy? This guy.
Love you, Bob. Yeah. And it's fascinating at the NBA level because I'm just like, how much college basketball did you actually watch this
I don't
year?
Watch
because
a ton.
I look at
I just start watching in the tournament and I start that's when I start to pay attention.
Yeah.
I would love it if I'm not rooting against Chet Holmgren. I just never saw nothing I saw in any of those games made me think, yeah, this guy is a lock
right.
in the top five.
And that's where I'm at because I look at Chet Holmgren and I'm just like, okay, You know, like, there's some there, but yeah. Is it enough for you to take him with the number one pick? Hell no. And Henry, if he goes to Henry Abbott,
who's not one to throw around idle gossip, he's like, it's Jabari Smith, and everything else.
You could go Jabari, Paulo, aka Patrick Mahomes, if you watched the F1 race a few weeks back. I look at Chet Holmgren and I'm just like, I don't see any there. And I'm sorry, I look at the teams in the top seven. They aren't the beacon of growth and development for a player. Hi, Kings, Magic.
Kings.
My main draft strategy
is that I think Banchero is going to be a lot better pro than he was in college, because one of my tenets of the NBA of draft evaluation is that Coach K is a fraud. So if a Duke player doesn't show everything he's got in his toolkit mm-hmm. while at Duke,
can we make the same case for Bill Self?
This is the Jason Tatum codicil that is, no one was blown away by Jason Tatum at Duke, and now Jason Tatum is Jason Tatum. And I think Banchero is going to have a similar career.
I also think it's just hard to ask a college coach to maximize this player who came into the system for 1 year.
It's very rare.
That's not like Calipari was pretty good at it, but that's not like their skill set is not to provide a showcase for what a player could be in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Their job is to win games and glad hand boosters. So, but I'm going to keep calling Coach K a fraud if that's okay with you guys.
Wow.
To me, it's Banchero who's going to have the best career out of those guys.
Whoever the Magic take, because the Magic, if you look at their past when they've had the number one pick, do you know who their last three number one picks have been?
This is not good statistical analysis.
This is.
Yeah, this is.
Do you know who it is, Bob?
It's Shaq.
Dwight Howard, Shaq. Mm-hmm. And
Chris Webber?
Nope.
Penny
Hardaway.
Wait, Penny wasn't the number one overall pick.
No, he was third. They traded him to the Orlando had the first overall pick.
Yes.
They traded the first pick to the Warriors for three firsts, and they took Penny.
Yes.
That's right.
So that's a pretty good track record, man.
Partly because Shaq enjoyed playing with Penny Hardaway while they were filming the movie Blue Chips.
That's
funny. Partly why they went that route.
But you know what's interesting with the Jabari Chet discussion that's going to pick up, and this is something that I think, like when I read like off like it, the Gonzaga part of this is that Jalen Suggs, they took him last year in the lottery. Jalen Suggs, he's probably not even positioned to start next year. Markel and Cole Anthony are probably still the starting backcourt in Orlando, but he's someone who's close to Chet and they played AAU ball together. Growing up, like this is like when they were like 7 years old. They've known each other for a long time. And you're trying, and if you're Orlando, this is what people miss, I think, sometimes when you're looking at drafting and all the different things. Like there's just so many other competing factors other than this guy can hoop and this guy can't. There is so many other things that go into these picks and these trades and these discussions, but I would love to be in the room when they try and tell Jalen, we're not taking your guy, Chet. We're going with Jabari. And he's like, well, that you worry about pissing off the guy you just took in the lottery the year before.
No, you don't.
Why?
You got to take all the feelings out of it.
But that's not reality. You can't do it. These are all grown men.
I'm going to go with Abbott's take, which is that Jabari is a lock for the first overall.
Yeah.
Maybe Orlando trades out of it.
But I would take Jabari. You can't trade out of it. But I would take Jabari.
Yeah, you can. If somebody, everybody's got a price. Ted DiBiase said it. Everybody's got a price.
I wouldn't do it. If you're Orlando, you don't need to keep acquiring more assets. You've already got 19 different young guys that you got to figure out.
If you feel like Jabari Smith is a better player than Chet Holmgren and you can get him at three, then yeah.
He won't be there at three. There's no way. Oklahoma City's not
even passing. I don't know. Because Houston's got the second pick, right?
No, Oklahoma City does. Yeah.
Third. Okay. The rumor that Henry posted the other day is that the Kings would move up to 2 to take Chet.
Mm-hmm.
Jabari still goes 1 in that scenario. Banchero goes 3.
I love Banchero in Houston with Jalen. I love that situation.
Yeah.
And then you've got Oklahoma City at 4, and they, I guess, have
Shaden Sharp.
Shaden Sharp,
Shaden
so I can
Sharp, yeah.
So I can get Jaden Ivey in Detroit.
Hmm.
Yeah, Jaden Ivey and Kate Cunningham would be a pretty fun backcourt.
Because basically, it's a cheaper version of cheaper, more athletic version of Jeremy Grant.
I mean, Jeremy's a lot bigger than Jaden Ivey. Hey, like Jaden Ivey's fun though. I don't know if you've watched Jaden Ivey can jump out of the gym. He's fun, man.
He would be the number one pick in any other draft.
No, he does not have the jump shot. If Suggs was coming out of Gonzaga this year, he would go first overall. Like none of these guys. Like you could make a very clear argument that
I don't think Suggs would go above Chet or Jabari. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think they would.
Jabari is a bucket, man. Watching him up close in the Auburn-Tennessee game.
Green, fine. Leading Suggs out of it, but definitely Green, Mobley, and Cunningham would all go ahead of anyone.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And I would argue that Suggs coming out of the NCAA tournament was getting – like, people were talking about Suggs going ahead of Jalen Green. They were talking about him going second.
He did a lot of – In terms of boosting draft stock, he did a great job.
Yeah, he reminded me of Brandon Roy, and that just hasn't happened this year. But
we'll see. He just needs playing time consistently.
Can I tell you who my Knicks guys are? Who the guys are that I'm hoping fall to the Knicks?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Benedict Mathurin.
Okay.
I'll bite. Oh God, what's a Benzik? That would be fun.
Yeah. Number two, Jeremy Sochan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's great. Taylor.
Yeah. And number three, Dyson Daniels, 6'8" point guard out of the G League team.
Oh, Ignite. Yeah. I mean, hey, that's not bad.
Those are my guys. Those are my three guys. Those are the guys.
Bob
that
loves
the
draft. See, like any kind of draft, like he's.
I don't care if the anthem at the NBA draft because one, the Knicks always get the shaft, but or they shaft themselves. Look, everyone plays the draft revisionist game, and Obi Toppin is very fun. But I wanted Halliburton. I was a Halliburton guy. I was born a Halliburton guy. I'll die a Halliburton guy. I really wanted Halliburton that year. I had other draft misses in years. But, I'm an NBA draft. I'm a draft Nick. Let's call me a draft Nick. Those are the three guys who I like. And that may change. I think one of them will be on the board for New York, so that should be pretty cool. I think Mathurin's going to go really high. I think he's going to test well and pick him. His game translates very easily. You can see a role as an athletic, a shooter. Like, that's going to be there. If he can lock down his defense or get any secondary creation, that's going to be a very nice player to have. Sochan is just a Swiss Army knife that you can plug in all kinds of places, and I think he'd even be like a 6'8". Kevon Looney type center if you eventually plug him in there. He plays like a Tasmanian devil. He wants to hurt people, and I'm in favor of that. And Dyson is, he's a incredibly poor man's Josh Giddey, and I think that's a valuable type to have in the NBA these days. You worry about his jump shot, you worry about his lack of athleticism, but he's a smart player. So, yeah, I have eaten the tape, guys. I've gotten my evaluations in. Ready
there
to roll.
You go. Last main topic for today's sports reporters who have indeed reassembled. Saban versus Jimbo. It's the College Football Minute, Bob. You need to be in on this because...
Yeah.
I have been kept abreast.
Yes, this is a very important It Means More update, Bob. So when you need more context when you're tuning in
Is this the College Football Minute? Have we hit the College Football Minute technically?
We have
right
hit
now?
The May version of the College Football Minute.
Yes.
All right, well, you guys, do you think?
Did you see?
I like I'll just say that whatever made that tweet or article, I don't know what it was about calling their wife fat. That was the highlight of that story for me. That someone compared it to like insulting their wives or something. In any case, go on.
Never saw it.
Yeah.
I, like these the guys are evidently the guys involved in the corrupt system are mad that they now have to deal with a different corrupt system. So it's fine for me. Go on. College football minute it up.
Andrew, did you see what Spurrier responded with last night?
Yes, and it is very on brand. It is very hilarious. Kind of, sort of accurate.
Here's the quote from Saban, or from Spurrier on the Saban Jimbo mess. So this is from AL.com. He said, quote, "I don't think Saban told any lies there, so I don't know what he was mad about. Since Fisher beat him last year, I guess he can talk now. He hasn't beat much of anybody, but he beat Saban last year." Just throwing more gasoline on this fire. But I just... you know what's funny, Andrew, is you know that this became super mainstream when I'm getting, like, my great aunt's Facebook messaging me and asking me if I'm going to talk about Jimbo versus Nick on the pod. And that's just... It's so universal, and everyone was just so caught up.
Nick was unhinged. But the thing is, Nick has been saying... Sorry to interrupt.
Well, no, I don't think he was unhinged. I think if you watch the video, and everything about Nick Saban is... Everything he says is very pointed. I don't think he accidentally says anything. And I think... I'm a pro-Nick guy, and I think what he was saying was that, hey, we don't have the infrastructure to do what Texas A&M did. So if this continues year over year... We're not going to have the best players anymore, Alabama business leaders. So this new world of NIL, like, we have to be like Spire Sports. Shout out to my guys up here in Knoxville. Like, there's just, you have to kind of adapt. And I think he was using A&M as, like, the model to adapt. And then for me, I found Jimbo's comments, like, I understand, like, him getting called out personally. It's like the honor amongst thieves line where they talked about that, where he's just like, I'm sure he was upset. Like, it discounts what he does, because one of the things that people miss about NIL and recruiting is that it's not just money. Like, there's a Nico did not just choose, and we don't know if it's Nico, if he's that unnamed player in the athletic store. We don't know that. So any player that Tennessee gets, and any guy who's getting that money, it's more, they're still having to meet with coaches. They're still like, how are you going to use me in this system? And seeing Tennessee's offense last year is a fun thing. So if you're a Brew McCoy and you're a five-star kid, you're like, oh, you'll just have these lobs to me where I'm just going to have 200-yard games because of our speed and tempo.
Hold on. Brew McCoy isn't actually just going to bail and go to another school in the next, 2 years?
I hope not. Okay, we need him on the outside.
I'm just saying, that's his gimmick. Here's the thing. Nick Saban has been basically signaling for two reasons. One, NIL in its current state is terrible for the competitive balance of college football, because he knows well enough that there are maybe 20 to 25% of the schools that can compete in this NIL era. Then you've got maybe a 30% that are trying to get their ducks in order and trying to develop their own NIL financial program. Then you got like this 50% that just can't compete, whether it is because of there's an academic standard that's first, or they just don't have the funds to actually do it. And he's been calling for regulations, and some people look at it as, he sees everybody's catching up to him. Are they really catching up? Like, I mean, the schools that are going to be happy and prosper during NIL were prospering in the first place. Spoiler alert, everybody. But look, if Nick Saban's going to call out people on this, fine. But you know what? It's not even just a call out. He's sending a message to Jimbo.
I don't think it's just the Jimbo. I think I really do believe it was not a Jimbo or Dion thing. I think it was more to the Alabama business leaders that, like,
I'm talking about he wants revenge. He's not going away quietly. Like, I get that there's the whole aspect of, yes, Bob, I know you're excited about this.
Well, Bob had a question. I've been jabbed. I am sick.
I was messing with you, Bob.
I am gutting out this podcast, even though I should be on IR. Thank you.
But, okay, Willis Reed.
That's right.
But no, I mean, I
give me horse tranquilizers to be able to do this pod.
But see, here's the thing: everybody in the SEC West is circling Alabama, and you definitely get the vibe Nick Saban's like, "Oh, okay, you want to do this? Bet, cool." Because he knows that for the first time in his career, or maybe since he's been at Cincinnati, Brian Kelly can actually cheat in recruiting this time. Because he couldn't do it at Notre Dame. Hi, Kenny Pickett. Miss you, buddy. Which is one of my favorite NIL stories that went wrong, where Notre Dame literally tried to buy Kenny Pickett away from Pitt, but Notre Dame didn't have their NIL ducks in order. And so now you've got that aspect. Lane Kiffin's going to be there. Like, this is definitely a Nick Saban's hunkering down. He's going to pick off, you know, basically next year is going to be a revenge tour. Congratulations, everybody.
I think Nick and a lot of these coaches are in the right when it comes to it, because I talk to a lot of coaches, and one of the things that I do think is true is just that, like, NIL, and I think what Nick had in mind, what a lot of these coaches had in mind, was that once you're there, and you're on TV, and you're playing, and your jersey's in the building, and we know you can play, then there is an NIL value to you, right? Where it's like, you're on TV, people know you, you are making a lot of money for this university.
Yeah.
But before you get there, putting the money and having these situations where you have 16 and 17-year-old kids talking with boosters, and because it's hard to figure out if boosters are talking to these kids, and like you said, that's something that's always happened. But there's just more money where it's just instead of $50,000 under the table, it's $1 to $2 million under the table. And it's trying to figure out, you know, these kids, it's just a lot of money and a lot of people in these kids' ears at a really young age before they've even played for the university. So it's like these upfront payments where it's putting a lot of pressure on kids. It's putting a lot of pressure on coaches. And I don't know. I think you'd be hard-pressed. Outside of Dabo, most of these coaches want these kids to get paid. They want them to get paid whatever they're worth. They want them to do, like, Sark's openly, like, Bijan Robinson earned every bit of that Lamborghini deal in Austin. I think they just are uncomfortable with the 16 and 17-year-old kids getting paid a lot of money before to get them even in the building. You know what I mean? Where it's like before they're even there and contributing to the university and making – because, like, once you're there, Bryce Young makes – the University of Alabama a lot of money. These players make that, but until they get there, and we'll see with just across the board, I don't know. I think there's a lot more nuance that people leave out when it comes to these NIL debates, and I think that Jimbo and Nick, they both probably understand that they should not have gone about this the way they did, and it was just a heat of the moment. It's a lot of pressure. These are high pressure jobs, and competition is just at an all-time high. It's a cutthroat business, and I think a lot of these coaches are just frustrated and are just airing. It's hard for them. I think it'd be hard for anybody not to slip up from time to time about how frustrated you are with where things are going, because it's still just every day there's something new right now in college football that's happening. That's just it's a lot, and you're putting a lot, like, these guys are paid handsomely well. Like, no one's going to shed a tear for any of these guys, but I think by and large, it's still rough. Like, it's still uncomfortable. It's still significantly harder for a lot of them. And that's just the reality. So when it's harder, when there's a lot more pressure, and when you're a Jimbo and you're like, I didn't buy my guys. And I, like, because Jimbo looks at it as, we have this whole recruiting staff. I met with all of these kids. I talk with them. I talk with how they're going to use them. It's like, why did Walter Nolan pick me, the number one kid in the class? It's like, well, you had Myles Garrett. Like, there's been past success at A&M. A&M edge guys have gotten number one. Like, A&M did have an amazing season. People forgot in 2020 that just got lost by the wayside because of COVID. And they had a little bit of a down year, 8-4. But, like, it's still a great operation. And Jimbo's won a national title. And it's still just – I understand where he was like, hey, man, it's not that simple. You can't just do that, because there are other schools that have that kind of money that can't recruit like that, that haven't been able to recruit like that. If it was that easy, they would do it too. So yeah. I understand where he's coming from. I feel like that's just kind of where I'm at after a couple days here.
Yeah. Totally get it.
Bob, we're back. What's your pick of the week?
New Kids in the Hall episodes.
What is that?
Is that on, where is that at, by the way?
Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. Fine.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, what?
What is that?
Bob explained.
I don't know. You talk to him. He's your son.
Fine. Okay, so Kids in the Hall was basically late 80s, early 90s.
Show ever. It was popular in the late 80s, early 90s. You would watch it on, it was around on HBO. They're Canadian.
I thought this was a musical group.
Didn't they go to Comedy Central?
Comedy Central started running later. They were originally on HBO.
Okay, gotcha. Broadcast.
But they are... like, if you like Mr. Show, Mr. Show would not exist without Kids in the Hall. If you like any, like... I'm trying to think of... like.
If you like any type of, like, uncomfortable comedy... in the last 20 years?
Yes.
Yeah. Kids in the Hall. Like Tim and Eric.
If you like Tim and Eric, they would not exist without Kids in the Hall. Like, the Kids in the Hall is... They were a sketch comedy troupe out of Toronto. They are brilliant and hilarious. And they disbanded in 1995 and briefly... They made a feature film, which was not that great, and for a whole bunch of reasons. And they've occasionally done touring shows, but they are back with new episodes for the first time since, again, you know, close to three decades ago. So they are still awesome. Various members of the Kids in the Hall have gone on to all kinds of careers in movies and TV shows. Dave Foley, you may know from his run on News Radio. You never saw the show News Radio with Phil Hartman and Joe Rogan and Andy Dick? And
I know what it is. I just never watched
Maura
it.
Maura Tierney? No, mm-hmm. Maura Tierney fan?
I was more of a and Just Andy... Shoot Me kind of guy.
Oh, okay, then Just Shoot Me.
Quality content.
Thanks. In any case, Chase, I will send you some links to a few Kids in the Hall sketches to get you up to speed. I am too offended right now to do anything else.
As you should be.
Yeah. In any case, the Kids in the Hall are back. It's great. There's a little bit of an Uncanny Valley quality to it for anybody who did grow up watching the original shows, because, you know, they're now all men in their mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little... unnerving if your persistent memory of them is what they were doing when they were in their 20s and 30s. But it's still great. And I'm slowly allowing myself one or two episodes at a time so as not to go through them all. But they're Kids in the Hall. Amazon.
Okay. Andrew, what about you?
George Carlin doc. I'm probably going to watch that. So I thought it came out next week, but it's actually out now, which on HBO Max. So I will be watching that probably today. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Also, that's about it. Oh, okay. Stanley Cup playoffs. I hope this is the year that people realize that the Stanley Cup playoffs are more exciting than the NBA playoffs.
We don't have to do these universal takes. Enjoy what you want. Like, the
I'm just saying. I feel like it's people, like, kind of discard the hockey playoffs. I'm like, no, like, you guys, like, the excitement.
No, you're allowed to discard the hockey playoffs if you're not a hockey fan. Like, that's okay. People do it all the time.
Like, but I feel like people
it's
need to.
It's very easy to casually enjoy a hockey game.
True.
Men go fast. They hit each other in the face.
Bob loses his mind. He goes full Don Cherry.
It's really true.
Yeah.
Pucks on net. Pucks in deep.
My pick of the week, though, Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me. I had not watched it, and
there you go.
I mean, I'm a big
he's cultured.
Hold
We're
on.
We're culturing the kid out here.
Hold on. I'm turning into Hubie Brown now. There you go. There you go.
I thought it was fine. I don't know why people
okay,
were...
Okay, you're Chase Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
You've
Uh-oh. Bob went away.
We've
just
lost
as he was
Robert.
Look at that freeze frame for Bob.
I know. Just happiness. Just a happy child.
This is incredible. What it's do you think
fantastic.
He was going to yell at me about, Andrew?
I don't know, but
there was something about
fantastic.
Twin Peaks Firewalk with me. I just don't know what it was specifically.
Yeah, he was very happy about it. And then all of a sudden,
I love this is really just like stuck on Bob. This is like one of those TV show bits where they do freeze frame somebody else, and you're just like, hey, you're probably wondering how we got here.
As Bob O'Reilly plays in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times.
What do we do here? It's too late in the show. We can't
I'm
just,
not
like...
going to lie. It would be kind of funny if we just said, hey, yeah, the show's over and Bob is just, like, frozen.
That's what we should do. Andrew.
Yeah.
This is the end of the show.
Yeah.
Bobby Zillerman, we hope you didn't get lost in the vortex. If you come back at some point, I can make another joke, but I'm not going to do that to spread disinformation about certain things. Andrew Hammond of the Detroit Free Press, thank you as always, and I will talk to you and maybe Bobby next week. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Sports Reporters Who Have Indeed Reassembled here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to Bob and Andrew for coming on this Sunday, May 22nd, 2022 edition here on the podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode of the show. New episode coming tomorrow. On this very feed, new episodes daily on this very podcast feed here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Remember to go subscribe to my written content at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. All kinds of great stuff coming over there. So Sports Renaissance Man, that's me. sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. I got all types of great stuff coming over there. I'm very excited for the summer plans on that front. So if you're not already, please make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button and become a subscriber, paid subscriber over there as I get into everything I got going on over there. Check out the YouTube page, all of our stuff over on YouTube, youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast. That easy, that simple. Go ahead and take care of that today. That'd be great. So you can watch all of our stuff, all of our videos, clips, all that good stuff over there on youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast right there. Yeah, all right, well, that is all I've got. Tweet at me at chase_thomas, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. Check out the home page, chasethomaspodcast.com, and then of course email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. New episode tomorrow. Over there, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.